Dr. Robert J. Lifton is the author of Superpower Syndrome, America's Apocalyptic Confrontation with the World. Dr. Lifton is a distinguished professor of psychiatry and psychology at the Graduate School University Center and director of the Center on Violence and Human Survival at John Jay College of Criminal Justice at the City University of New York. From mid-1995, he's been conducting psychological research on the problem of apocalyptic violence, focusing on Aum Shinrikyo, the extremist Japanese cult, which released poison gas in Tokyo subways. His book, Destroying the World to Save It, Aum Shinrikyo, Apocalyptic Violence and the New Global Terrorism, was published by Metropolitan Books in October of 1999. His writings on Nazi doctors and the problem of genocide, nuclear weapons and their impact on death symbolism, Hiroshima survivors, Chinese thought reform and the Chinese Cultural Revolution, psychological trends in contemporary men and women, and on the Vietnam War experience and Vietnam veterans have appeared in a variety of professional and popular journals. Dr. Robert J. Lifton joins us to talk about his latest book, Superpower Syndrome, America's Apocalyptic Confrontation with the World.
Apocalyptic violence is a special form of violence which includes massive destruction and, in some visions, destruction of the whole world in the service of renewal. So there's always large-scale destruction, but there's always a vision of purification and renewal and the achievement of perfect spirituality through this destruction. We find it very specifically in Judeo-Christian tradition, in the Bible, in various books of the Old Testament and New Testament, perhaps most dramatically in the book of Revelation, where there is the end of the world, the prophecy of the end of the world, in the service of spiritual renewal. And there are more or less equivalent visions in all of the major religions. And one can extend that and say that one finds versions of apocalyptic violence that are secular as well. For instance, in fascism and in communism, where with a secular kind of vocabulary and rhetoric, there is still a destruction of the previous world in the service of purification and renewal. When one thinks of the kind of apocalyptic violence I've been mentioning, one thinks of fanatics like Osama bin Laden, or who simply wants to destroy much of the world to render it pure in a kind of Islamist idiom of his own. One doesn't think of the United States, whom we think of as more secular and more moderate, but in fact, we have shown tendencies, and especially with the present administration, toward an apocalyptic violence of our own. And that includes the destruction of areas that we consider insufficiently democratic according to our own lights in order to create a form of renewal that brings about what we call democracy in the American image. And the invasion of Iraq is one example of an American expression of apocalyptic violence.
It seems, though, as you're speaking, that there has been, throughout American history, repeated expressions of apocalyptic vision and the use of apocalyptic violence. And I'm thinking in terms of the policy of manifest destiny, things like that.
There are elements in American history, including the idea of manifest destiny, and certainly including our projections of empire, whether with the Spanish-American War and involving the Philippines, involving Hawaii, and other imperial expressions that we've had, which have had an apocalyptic tinge. But that said, I believe that there is a quantum jump in a version of empire, or what I call fluid world control, and of an apocalyptic impulse, an apocalyptic jump with the present administration, in acting on this kind of vision on a worldwide basis. The present circumstances contribute to making it a quantum jump or a quantum leap. It has to do with our responding to an apocalyptic force such as Islamist extremism and the existence of that force in the world, and of other apocalyptic projections, and an administration which combines what I would call military fundamentalism, that is, seeking to solve problems of the world by military means rather than by diplomatic or nonviolent means, combining that kind of military fundamentalism with expressions of religious fundamentalism. And the expressions of religious fundamentalism include Christian fundamentalism of considerable influence in this administration, and the idea of destroying those parts of the world that can be spiritually renewed. And we find this in the vocabulary of this administration, of President Bush himself, in declaring an axis of evil, and in seeing himself following what Bob Woodward, who wrote this book called Bush at War, what he paraphrases Bush to feel as God's master plan. That is, this administration seems to combine a kind of secular militarism with a visionary religious sense of following a plan created by the deity.
We're talking with Dr. Robert J. Lifton, author of Superpower Syndrome, America's Apocalyptic Confrontation with the World. Earlier in our conversation, Dr. Lifton, you used the term fluid world control, and I'd like, if you would, to further explain that.
By fluid world control, I mean a different kind of empire that we seem bent on establishing. We are imperial and certainly empire building in our recent behavior, but it's not the same as, say, the model of the British Empire or of the Roman Empire long before that. In those situations, and notably the more recent British Empire, there was a creation of institutions of empire and a long-standing administering of the territories of empire on the ground through these institutions. In the American case, there's the impulse to move in and not stay very long, but to control events of history. And I call it the ownership of history, or the effort at fluid world control. In the end, it's a kind of fantasy, because nobody can control history. It is very unpredictable in important ways. But I think with the superpower syndrome and our sense of omnipotence, we can manifest this vision of fluid world control.
It seems if we look at the overtly religious apocalyptic vision of the radical Islamists, the Osama bin Ladens of the world, if you will, and then this mixture of religious and secular apocalyptic vision of the current administration in the United States, it seems to me that when looking at history, when you have forces like this in collision, that they really wind up being fuel for each other's escalation.
That's a kind of dynamic that I try to take up in my book. I don't claim that we're a mirror image of bin Laden and that we resemble him exactly in apocalyptic expression. It's not the case at all. We have our own version of an apocalyptic that I just talked about, and it's the interaction of the two as they respond to one another and see each other as the enemy and yet enhance each other's energies and mobilize the behavior of each other in this terrible dynamic, or what I sometimes call a dance of death. And it's particularly dangerous because it has these apocalyptic dimensions.
In looking at this on a psychological level, as we are, do the participants in this dance of death, as you put it, are they aware of what they're actually doing? I kind of think of it in terms of addiction and the addict being in denial of the real consequences of their actions.
While there can be an element of cynicism in which one says one has to destroy because that's what we intend to do, or one has to attack, that alleged cynicism or that rationale of attack is based upon what's perceived as a higher purpose. That's what totalism or all-or-none thinking is based on, always the claim of a higher purpose. And in that sense, one doesn't recognize in this dynamic that one is mobilizing more energies on the part of anti-American terrorism, as I believe we've done by invading Iraq. Rather, one sees oneself on a necessary mission, and in that sense, one does not take in or perceive the actual repercussions of one's behavior. And there are elements of what I call psychic numbing or denial and not perceiving reality. There's a lot of talk about a credibility gap, but one can speak of a reality gap in this sense.
I'm Mike Thornton, and today our guest is Dr. Robert J. Lifton, author of the book Superpower Syndrome, America's Apocalyptic Confrontation with the World. It seems, Dr. Lifton, that when we hear George W. Bush use phrases like you're either with us or you're with the terrorists, that these are real-world manifestations of the totalistic view that you were just talking about.
Absolutely. It's a polarization of the world into good and evil. The terrorists represent evil, and we represent good. It is totalizing. It's absolute in every sense. And there is the further implication that if we can destroy or capture every last terrorist, we will have eliminated evil in the world. And George Bush has said as much. And will be left only with good, so to speak. Now, that's rather wild fantasy, but in some degree, we function on that fantasy.
You included a chapter on the Aum Shinrikyo cult in Superpower Syndrome. Why did you do that?
Aum Shinrikyo was a remarkable cult. It still exists in some remnants right now. But Aum Shinrikyo was the Japanese cult that released sarin gas into the Japanese subways in 1995. And what's remarkable in a phrase about Aum Shinrikyo is the combination of ultimate zealotry with ultimate weaponry. So that Aum Shinrikyo had this apocalyptic vision of releasing much larger amounts of sarin gas later that year. They wanted nuclear weapons, incidentally, but they couldn't obtain them. That was their ultimate aspiration. Of releasing much larger amounts of sarin gas later that year. They were rushed and released, fortunately, a smaller amount and inefficiently when they did. But their vision was in releasing much larger amounts of creating a vast disaster in the Tokyo area and extending throughout much of Japan. The Japanese military would be drawn in and would believe that America had done this. America would believe that the Japanese had done this. Both would be drawn into a war which would be joined by other major powers and would become World War III, which would in turn lead to biblical Armageddon. It was a fanatical religious cult. Now, that's wild fantasy, there's no doubt about it, but it was wild fantasy backed up by the actual creation or production of weapons of mass destruction in the form of chemical and biological weapons, which they did successfully, to a degree, manufacture. That's why I can speak of it as this joining of ultimate zealotry with ultimate weaponry. And in that sense, they represent an extreme model of apocalyptic violence, even if they were a small group. They were just a cultic group of about 10,000 members in Japan, and only about 1,400 of those members were the most intense, those closest to the guru, because they lived like monks around him and with him. So it was a very small, and they had an extensive membership in Russia, though loosely defined. And yet, even being such a small cult, they had visions of destroying the world. That's more possible now because of the advances of technology and technology of communication. There are weapons of mass destruction that one can either produce or imagine obtaining, and there is more technological connection with much of the world that one can achieve or imagine, so that the apocalyptic imagination in relation to the real world now is more frequent and more feasible. And in the past, where the idea of an apocalyptic world destruction was an act of God that was viewed as some event distant from the capacities of human beings, now there is, with weapons of mass destruction, and especially nuclear weapons, there is the means of achieving this kind of prophecy of world destruction, more or less in actual terms. And this very much affects the apocalyptic atmosphere and becomes a lure or an attraction for extremely apocalyptic cults like Om Shinrikyo.
It's one thing having a fantasy of apocalyptic world destruction. It's another thing having that fantasy and the physical means of carrying it out.
That's right. In that fantasy, increasingly imagine the means of doing it and acquiring those means. And in that sense, Om Shinrikyo was very important because they followed a principle described by the ancient Jewish scholars as forcing the end. That is, the ancient rabbis debated whether it was appropriate to join in the violence which was considered necessary for the appearance of the Messiah. There had to be extensive violence, and then the Messiah would appear. And it was decided, fortunately, that such an approach to join in that violence was heretical, because only God could make that decision. However, contemporary apocalyptic cults like Om Shinrikyo bring no such restriction on themselves and embrace that idea of forcing the end. That policy of Om Shinrikyo was what made it so dangerous.
It's painfully obvious that when we talk about ultimate weaponry, there is no entity on the face of the earth, nor has there ever been one, that possesses more ultimate weaponry than the United States.
Yes, that's right. Our situation in the present world is quite unique, because never has a power been so militarily strong based on ultimate weapons. Nuclear weapons are the cornerstone, the basis for the superpower syndrome. And the superpower syndrome is really the extension of enormous military power into a mindset of entitlement, of ruling the world and controlling history, the kind of fluid world control that I mentioned just a moment ago. And in the present world, because of the combination of powerful technology of destruction and powerful technology of communication, the idea of superpower syndrome and fluid world control is more likely to occur. One can more readily imagine fluid world control and the expression of the superpower syndrome given the existence of nuclear weapons and given the existence of the overall world technology that we live in.
Today our guest is psychiatrist Dr. Robert J. Lifton, author of the book Superpower Syndrome, America's Apocalyptic Confrontation with the World. Perhaps a broader question, Dr. Lifton, is the whole tie between the notion of change and renewal and apocalyptic violence needed to bring it about.
Change and renewal in the absence of apocalyptic violence, and better still, in the absence of violence in general or with minimal violence, this is more of, I think, a human goal that we should seek. Change and renewal doesn't have to be brought about by apocalyptic violence, but there's a kind of paradox here that in the apocalyptic projection, it's often seen religiously as an expression of hope. And sometimes there could be an apocalyptic expression, the vision of the end of the world in the spirit of renewal, that's more or less symbolized and believed in and seen in relation to humane goals of changing the world in spiritual ways that are of benefit to human beings without actually literally destroying it. And I think what I found in looking back over studies I've done and others have done, there is more of the apocalyptic than we realize in actual large-scale destruction. You know, when I looked at my study of Hiroshima, or for that matter, my study of Nazi doctors, I didn't see either of them in specifically apocalyptic terms at the time that I did them. Now, as I look back at them, I see that there are apocalyptic dimensions to those studies, and really with large-scale destruction, you're likely to find those dimensions, but it's quite possible to bring about constructive change in the world without apocalyptic destruction.
Finally, and perhaps most importantly, Dr. Lifton, is there a way out of this, in your opinion?
I think so, even though what I talk about is very dire and very troubling, as many readers have told me. I do this with hope, because I think that this is only one direction that we're capable of, and it's as if the present administration has mobilized very real feelings in that direction. They are our lesser feelings, in my judgment. There are many ways to extricate ourselves from the superpower syndrome, and they would include our electoral system and mobilizing whatever we can from our democratic traditions. So, in concrete terms, the election of 2004 becomes enormously important, because one has the possibility of removing from office those who are the strongest advocates of fluid world control and the strongest examples of conviction of the superpower syndrome. Exposing the nature of the superpower syndrome, which can help Americans make their decisions, because I think that there is more and more of an American tendency in recent weeks and months to question the present administration, to look at some of the consequences of American aggressiveness abroad, including events in Iraq. But there has not yet been a widespread recognition of the extremism, the extremity of the present administration. And in my book, I try to make that clear. However, there is a tendency on the part of public opinion more toward questioning and more toward more moderate dimensions and what could be called international common sense. I talk at the end of my book as the need to embrace what Albert Camus called a philosophy of limits, to divest ourselves of this kind of claim to omnipotence, which is godlike. And we're capable of doing that, and we do that in most of our activities, in most of our lives. So people have to recognize the possibility for change, and it can be brought about by any one of a number of ways, being part of groups or forming new groups that oppose this kind of tendency and offer alternatives that diminish violence in the world, and always having a recognition that we are not hopelessly programmed creatures. We are able to make decisions, and to make constructive decisions as well as destructive ones.
We've been speaking with Dr. Robert J. Lifton, author of the book Superpower Syndrome: America's Apocalyptic Confrontation with the World.